Our scripture reading is from Isaiah 58, 9 through 14 verses. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continuously and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall rise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. If you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, serving your own interest, or pursuing your own affairs, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride upon the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of your ancestor, Jacob, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken.
Reading this morning, New Testament reading this morning is from Luke chapter 13, verses 10 through 17. And this is Jesus they're talking about. Now, he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And just then, there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it to water? And ought not this woman, the daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" And when he had said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things being done by him. May God add his blessing and lend understanding to the reading of his word. Estimates vary as scholars look at the scriptures about what constitutes a miracle, what constitutes a healing. But it is thought that the Gospel of Luke, along with the Gospel of Mark, have the most healings. They come up with a number of about 30 healings in the Gospel of Luke. And early readers were inspired by these accounts to realize that Jesus was of God because he had the power to do these miracles. And all that's true, but sometimes it's productive to consider the kind of miracle this is. We can learn a lot about this miracle just by what it's not described as much as by what it is described as, what her ailment is, as described in Scripture. She is not described as a woman who had a bad back. She's not listed as having a scoliotic curve or a hunchback It doesn't say that she was in some kind of a serious accident that had her in this state. No. We're told that her back troubles, that she was bent over, not from being overweight, not from carrying buckets of water for years and years, that finally rendered her in a state of being permanently bent over in an age before back surgery and chiropractors and steroids and painkillers. She's described here as a woman with a spirit that crippled her for 18 years. So as much as we purport to know about medicine and backs, the human spine, and how to treat it, and that's still a very inexact science, isn't it? If anyone here has back trouble, has anybody ever just fixed you for good? Does it kind of keep recurring? Even surgery, does it ever really fix everything completely? She is described as, even as much as we know about that, she is described as having had a spirit that crippled her for 18 years. Now in that state, if she was bent over the way it's described, all you have to do is picture that. You know, you picture her bent over. You might even try this at home, or you could do it in your pew right now. Just stand up and bend over. Bend over for a little while and just, what do you see? You see your feet. You see the floor. Your field of vision is kind of myopic, isn't it? And you can crane your neck a little bit and try to look to the side or to look ahead. But it's difficult if you're in a state of being bent over. And with that limited field of vision, her world kind of closed in on her, one would think, that there really was a limitation to what she could see and interact with. And Jesus accurately describes it as a state of bondage for her, which is why he healed her against the objections of the religious leaders of the day who had a serious problem with anybody being healed on a Saturday. You're not supposed to do this. Scriptures say that, they think. No one can find out where that's said. Don't heal anybody on the Sabbath. But that's what the lore and the literature, the Pharisaic writings, the rabbinical traditions, that was their idea of what you could and couldn't do on the Sabbath. I once knew someone similar, in a similar plight as this woman. And I was not related to her by blood. She married my dad's uncle, Eldon Brotsman. She was called Aunt Dot. Dorothy, I'm sure, was her real name. And Eldon was a railroad worker down in Hornell. And it's funny, I ran into somebody that worked on the railroad with him, and they called him Brats, and that was my nickname in college, Brats, you know. And Eldon worked at the railroad back when Hornell was a railroad town, and he finished his career, and he got that railroad pension, and Dot was his faithful wife. They had no children. She developed severe arthritis that confined her to a wheelchair in 1966. And my father would take us to visit her, maybe because Dad had the same diagnosis as her. And maybe he saw what his future would be in her, wanted to learn from her. And so 3 or 4 times a year, we'd go to her house and visit her. She and Eldon had a nice Victorian-era house, and it was clean. And it smelled like Pine Sol, which just was the most favorite cleaner of the day, I think. And we always found Dot having been gotten out of bed in the morning by somebody. Eldon, while he was alive, and after he died, somebody else would get her out of bed in the morning. And they would fix her up, clean her up, put her up in her chair. And there she sat all day. By her chair was a table with a remote control and a telephone. Newspapers. She was an avid reader. And as she sat there and talked, I would look at her as a younger person. I would look at her and see that her hands were horribly twisted with the arthritis. She lived at a time when doctors still made house calls. So she didn't have to go out to go to the doctor. The doctors came to her. Somebody would deliver her groceries every day. Somebody would, as I said, take care of her and clean her up and put her to bed at night. And my understanding is that, except for ambulance trips to the hospital, she never left that house from 1966 on until her death, approximately 1981, early 1982. I remember her funeral at the Episcopalian Church in Hornell. But during those visits, those are particularly memorable to me, she would ask questions of us. Now, mind you, if she had not left her house since 1966, and it was now 1976, it's been 10 years, how much things change in 10 years? And she was relying on her memory and her considerable mind to piece together what Hornell looked like now. She heard about this restaurant called McDonald's that came in. Where is that located? And so we would tell her. And is the American Motors still selling cars there by the high school on the corner? Yes, yes, they are. And then we would tell her we'd gone out to dinner. Oh, did you go to the Big Elms? Yes, we went to the Big Elms. Great restaurant. Oh, I love their food. She had not set foot out of her house in all those years and was piecing together her town, her hometown, based on the information we were giving her. And her imagination was her world. You could not say that she was myopic in her focus, even though all she had to look at were the walls of her nice house day after day. That she was thinking and using her imagination to reconstruct the city that she lived in and loved. Dot was physically impaired, but I don't think that she could be described as having a spirit that crippled her. She had a body that crippled her, but not a spirit that crippled her. And she stayed that way, positive, right up until her death, 15 years or so of being in a wheelchair. And getting back to the woman in Luke, she's healed that day of her crippling spirit. But unfortunately, the way this is worded, not everybody gets healed that day. Can you guess who doesn't get healed in this story, in the scripture? She's healed, but who isn't healed? The religious leaders are the ones that aren't healed. These are the ones that have a notion in their mind that somewhere you're not supposed to heal on a Saturday. And this came to them from centuries of rabbinical literature that came to that conclusion. What does the scripture say? Well, we read some of the scripture. What about the scripture says that Chris read this morning that talks about what you should do on the Sabbath? And God wanted people to have a Sabbath. God wanted people to take a day and not do any work. But the rabbinical literature came up with the idea between the time that was written and the time we get to Jesus' day. They came up with the idea that not working meant not healing on the Sabbath. They had lost their ability to see the forest for the trees. Where did God say that he didn't want anybody healed on the Sabbath? It's nowhere to be found in Scripture. This was a tradition that they had made up and were still enforcing it as if it was the law. Like they had a right to maybe kill Jesus over it because he's healing people on the Sabbath. And Jesus tries to give them the big picture again. Look, if you had a donkey that was thirsty, wouldn't you let the donkey be untied? I guess that's work, untying the donkey for a minute, let the donkey go over to the trough and drink. I guess that's work. You know, if you saw somebody that was by the road and sick and needed help, would you not help them? Oh, I can't work. It's the Sabbath. Is that how it's supposed to be? Well, that's what they thought. But they had, like the woman before them, they had a spirit of bondage in them, in their hearts. And like the woman before them, their field of vision was myopic. They could only see what was right in front of them or right below them at their feet. And one generation after another, after another, after another kept going with these traditions, this spirit of brokenness that caused that group of religious leaders to be crippled for all time. And unfortunately, after the woman stood up straight and walked away, rejoicing at God's healing, and after she went back to seeing the world the way I wish Aunt Dot could have seen the world, as far as I know, all she got was a hearse ride from her house to the funeral home, to the Episcopalian church, after 15 years of not seeing the town that she loved. But this woman didn't have that situation at all. She could get up, and no longer looking at her feet, no longer looking at the ground, she could walk around and see everybody face to face. She could walk around and see the community that she loved. She didn't have a limited field of vision anymore. She could see everything, and she was free. And she praised God for God's healing power through his son, Jesus. And the religious leaders left that room that day mad because Jesus did what they thought was work on the Sabbath, stuck in their limited field of vision, not healed, and maybe never healed for the rest of their lives. That's a tragedy right there. And all we can do from a story like that is ask, how does it apply to us? This is why it's important to go back to Scripture and know Scripture. What things do we believe that aren't of Scripture, and yet they hold us back and they cripple us? What things do we think you have to do or you ought to do that limit our field of vision? What traditions do we have that aren't based on anything God said, but they're based on stuff that people said, that keep us crippled and hobbled, that create a spirit of brokenness, not necessarily in the congregation, but could be, not necessarily in your personal life, but could be? What things do you hold on to? What spirit of brokenness imprisons you, shackles you, bonds you to the earth, gives you a spirit of bondage in your life? I can't answer these questions for you, and I'm not asking for you to call them out today. I'm just asking you to do some self-examination, as we all should. Wouldn't you like Jesus to take the ways that we are bent over, the way that we are looking at our own feet and the ground around us? Wouldn't you like Jesus to pray over us, lay his hand on us, and allow us to look up straight and see the world as it is around us and see everything and increase our field of vision? That is what scriptures tell us Jesus was doing all the time, at least 30 times in the book of Luke, maybe 30 times in Mark, many other times in Matthew and in John. What spirit is crippling you? And how could Jesus heal it if you just asked? Sometimes I encourage people to do like an empty chair exercise. And you can do this at home sometime, maybe this week. When you're sitting in your chair, you know, doing your own little Aunt Dot imitation for a few hours, pretend that Jesus is sitting in the chair next to you. And have a conversation with Jesus. Ask him, what do you see about me that makes me like that woman? How do I look to you? And ask him, as you determine what that might be or think in your heart what that might be, ask him to heal you. Because that's who he is, the healer. He loves nothing better than to free people who are in bondage.